You're from the Philippines.
Yes.
I can tell. Tagalog is... What local language?
Tagalog?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was at one time. We have a temple there. It was a long time ago. And it was a library. And it says that it's like 40% of all... Tagalog
mm-hmm.
is from Sanskrit. Yeah, it was just, you know, the Indian traditional classical culture of India. as far as our tradition goes, God creates the world, you know, and then as steam, it's very, very fine, and gods and goddesses, and then it becomes more gross and more gross, and finally you end up with Houston, Texas. So, there, you know, there's subtle forms of things, like dreams, and that becomes a gross world. And a lot of evidence for this, even from science. And so then the traditional culture in India then is Sanskrit, and then also then when the people went there from Europe, when they arrived in India, they were surprised to find so many words, the same as the Sanskrit words. And not just the words, but also the grammar. Right? Way of declining the words and that kind of stuff was the same as classical Greek, so on. You know? For example, in English we say God. God damn it. Like that, you know? And God we trust. But if you look at the Oxford Book of Etymology, the origin of words, it says the English word God comes from the German word Guten, which comes from the Sanskrit word Huten, which comes in modern Hindi is Havan, right? Yeah. And so if you have a sacrifice, you're going to worship different, you know, angels, gods and goddesses, Mother, Bhumi, the earth goddess, fire gods, you know, the sun gods. They have different responsibilities. For example, before you start your education, you may want to worship Saraswati, you know, the goddess of education. If you're having trouble with your health, you may want to worship
Surya.
Yeah. So different combinations, different optional, you know, forms of worshiping, getting mercy. But there's one deity who has to be there. It's not optional. You know, it's not optional like that. And that's the Huten. And Huten means he who must be worshipped. You can worship Surya, Andhra, Chandra, Surya, Chandras, Varuna, you know, Agni, fire god, the sun god, the moon god, the earth god, different things like that. But the Huten has to be there, otherwise the whole sacrifice doesn't work. So the Huten is Shalagram Shila. And Shalagram Shila, like that. And Shalagram Shila has to be present in any sacrifice, otherwise it doesn't work. So when people say, oh my God, they're saying, oh my Shalagram Shila. There's something of origin, it's like that. They don't know. There's a meaning behind these things. You know? And so the same way that in India you say sorry, and in Tagalog, you say sarang. That's where the word comes from. And in Hindi we say Lord, Hari. And in Tagalog, king is Hari. Yeah? So, okay, so the culture was the Vishayan Empire. The Vishayan Empire, it went out of, you know, Bharat, it went to Cambodia, and they built Angkor Wat. And even now people are beginning to appreciate how big that place is. It's all covered by jungle. You know? So you found some temples, and it's a very dangerous place. Even at nighttime, the, you know, security guards and stuff go into their, you know, fortresses. And they found like places with inscriptions, the Ramayana and stuff, you know. But it's all been covered by jungle because this was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And so, but if you have, like, for example, like you build a canal, you know, with stone, and it fills full of earth and plants. But when it rains and water dries out, it lasts longer there because it's a canal. It's a box like that, so it dries out slower. So if you take like satellite pictures of this place when it's starting to dry out, then you'll see like these canal systems. Like that, you know, straight lines crossing. So in the beginning they thought Angkor Wat was like this big, but then doing this kind of modern technology discovered that actually it goes just longer. It was a gigantic city, it was a metropolis. And they find, you can find like old temples and so many things. So this Vishayan Empire went on and on, I guess Bali. And then Bali is Hindu culture. And finally it reached the Philippines. You know? the Philippines, unusual place. It's the only, one of the only monotheistic countries in the whole area. Everybody else is worshiping ancestors or pantheists, many gods. But when the Christians came there, right away they accepted this. You know, there's this comment that one laikai mm-hmm. would only cooperate to attack another laikai. It was so like, you know, strong, passionate, you know, family people. But still, they were able to all get behind a monotheistic culture, and then contact with China like that. You know. So it's our ideas. This was a global culture, you know. And again, time is one of the most important things to try and understand all these things, is that if you look at different cultures, for example, like there's many books on time. It's a very nice thing if you're interested in reading. It's looking at books on different culture and time. One very nice guy is E.T. Hall, Edward Thomas Hall. Not extraterrestrial. He was a professor from Northwestern University, Northwestern, when I was there. He's a cultural anthropologist. And different cultures, I think one of his books is called The Hidden Dimension. The Hidden Dimension. You know, for example, like right now, you notice that nobody is touching anybody else. He's touching the baby, but that's just about it. Everybody else keeps like a little. You don't touch. Like that, you know? And also the spacing. Different cultures have different personal space, private space. You know? American culture is about this far, right? Not that far. British culture is a little more. You know, Greek is a little less. You know, different cultures. Most Indians, when they come to the West, they have this experience that after a couple of days, somebody will take them in the business place and say, "Well, Rajiv, I want to. Don't be offended, but we've been talking, and you're standing a little bit too close to people. I know they're feeling uncomfortable, and nobody wanted to mention it, but I know it's just, this is the way your culture." And so, oh, okay, well, so you kind of back off. You learn that, you know. So it's private space. If you enter the private space, it means one of two things: either violence or romance. Yeah. Yeah. And people say, you know, again, if a man stands too close to you, you feel like, what's he doing? You know? But in traditional Arabic culture, unless you can feel the person's breath on your face, it's considered impolite if you get that far away. So if somebody has the breath smells bad, it's not a big deal. It's like, you know, for example, like your hair is a little bit off your face. Oh, your hair is falling on your face. Oh, thank you. Oh, your stomach is really bad. Oh, really? Oh, thank you. It's like, you know, but here it's like, oh my God. It's like, you know, you can't tell somebody, oh, your breath stinks. You know? Yeah. So different cultures and then the different perception of reality, you know. And it's so extreme that, you know, for example, people are going to have cataracts from birth. The light goes in, but they never see anything. So the organ develops, but they can't just see cloudy, you know. So they know what a book is, they know what water is, they know what cups are, glasses, square, you know, they learn geometry, they live in Euclidean space, you know, squares, point lines, you know. So about 1935 or something, they developed a surgery to take these things off, you know, survival store. So when they came off, again, I mentioned this before, is that when people, well, the first thing they could see, they didn't see, oh, that's what a book looks like. Well, that's what a, you know, palm pie looks like. That's what flowers look like. No. They saw a booming, buzzing confusion. Everything was just everywhere, you know. For example, even babies, newborn babies, they don't have binocular vision. You know, one eyeball will tend to go off this direction, over here, like that, you know. So the mother is going, goo, 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 and they're like, learning to, you know, use their eyes to develop this, you know, kind of perception of space, like that. But different cultures, you don't get locked in that way. It's just part of the software. For example, if you're taking a camera, you're filming some event, and you can preview the environment with your left eye, which is outside the camera, right? Okay, that's happening over there, so I got to get ready to expand the lens and make a pan that way, you know? So you can actually divide the function up like that. You practice to two different functions in your eyeballs like that. You know? So this is all being carried on by what in Sanskrit is the buddhi. Bhumir, apo, nalo, vayu, kam, mano, buddha, evacha, ahankara, etiyame, vinya prakadarashtada. Krishna's describing his world. He's God. He comes 5,000 years ago during the age of bronze when things are much different, much more subtle, finer, magical. right? And then he's describing, what is this world, how I'm present. And these are my eight separated energies, being a Prakritir. My eight separated energies, you know, like that. I don't, you know, like the prison. The prison is a part of the government, but it's separated from the rest of the function. The Department of Parks, the Department of Recreation, the Department of Welfare. You know, the Department of Prisons and Correction is a Bina Prakritir. It's a separated energy, like that. You know? So he's a Krishnas, but he's just different. He's doesn't relate to them directly, you know, so much. You know. And by understanding these, then we can begin to appreciate God. You know, we had a very nice meeting with Professor Atlin, John Atlin, and very, very nice, really good rapport and everything. He was very enthusiastic. He said, we have to stay in touch now about these programs of NEO, secondary programs like that. You know? But I was trying to explain some of these things, and you know, the Sankhya is the beginning understanding of what is nature, like that. And without even appreciating it a little bit, it's just very difficult to appreciate Ayurveda, you know, Gandharva Veda, architecture, all these things. You know, we speak of God, right? You know? So the first part of the Bhagavad Gita, and that's Krishna's point, he's trying to establish how you can get free from this gross material absorption, right? And he repeats it again in the last six chapters. In the middle six, he's really talking about then how to have a fundamental relationship with God. Nothing fancy, right? Just to bow down to him. You know, mamana bhavamabhakto manjiji mam namaskuru. Bow down to him, offer your respects to him. You know, out of appreciation. He's not envious of you. He doesn't want your pie or your samosas or anything else. But, you know, he's not a greedy person, selfish person, motivated person. You know, neurotic guy. You know, smiling, but actually behind it, he's all very you know, cruel and you know, strange. You know. Bertrand Russell. You know him? British philosopher. He had one story. He said, in the beginning, God created the angels, and he made them eternally happy. So they're always singing about how wonderful he was. Well, why not? Because they were eternally happy, you know. So, but after some time, God became a little bored with that. So then out of the void, he created the earth, right? And the people evolved from dinosaurs, and they were being chased by the dinosaurs and attacked by different things, and they made altars out of stone and worshipped him, God, like that, and sacrificed people. And they became more advanced, and they developed technology, and they built bigger cathedrals, and suffered plagues and wars with swords and knives and this kind of thing, and they still worshipped God, you know. And then finally they became very advanced, and you know, they were suffering so many things like that, but still they bowed down to God. And then finally, out of the void, God sent a second planet, and it hit the earth and destroyed everybody. Then God turned to the angels and said, that was fun. Let's do it again. So is that the kind of God we're talking about? He's like, you know. So it's very, you know, it's understanding God and actually coming to that level. To understand God, you've got to become godly. Right? If you think you are this body, then how can you possibly know God, who's total spirit? You know? So we have to come out of a shirt, right? Come out of your car, and you have a personal relationship with somebody. So come out of the gross body, come out of the mind, right? Come out of the booty, the subconscious, and then the soul comes out. My goodness, what is the soul? Who am I? Wow. The Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that if you know, he's describing that the soul is more brilliant than thousands of suns, right? What to speak of God, the individual soul, when it wakes up. One time Prabhupada was walking on the beach in our spiritual master. He was walking on the beach in Los Angeles, Long Beach, and there was a big oil tanker there. You know, how big are those? Bigger than my chair? Bigger than the house? Yeah. Bigger than the whole block? They're big. They're gigantic. You know? The propellers are bigger than this house. So there were some tugboats with their ropes pulling it in place to, you know, to have it locked, tie it up to unload it. And so Prabhupada said, this is Maya. And people were saying, the devotees were wondering, well, why is that, Prabhupada? And he said, oh, the big boat. It turns over its propellers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times. Breaks the ropes. And they were like threads. You know, looking at them like threads, breaks the ropes and goes wherever it wants to. The same way, because we've lost our motivation, Then we're being pulled around by a cigarette. Oh, I've got to have a cigarette. I've got to have a cigarette. You know, oh, thank you. Like that. Or something. Got to watch television. Got to have sports. Got to fight with my wife. Got to fight with my husband. Got to, you know, play with my kids. You know, something. Little thing. Which just keeps us in this little bit of pleasure. A little bit of happiness. But if we actually manifested our real ability, which can only be manifested in terms of the real enjoyer, right? You know, God makes a demand on you, right? He wants something. He wants something extraordinary out of you, like that. Yeah. You know? So then we can do it. Yeah. You know? Yeah. We can do it. Express ourselves. Yeah. You know? So the soul is now just caught up in this matter, these little things. Once there was an eagle, and her egg fell out of the nest, rolled down into the chicken yard, and the chickens saw it, and they thought, blah blah. At a conference, they decided, well, it's an egg, I guess we should sit on it, you know. So they sat on it, you know. Then after some time it hatched, and out came a funny chicken. You know, he looked at everybody else, and they were all just looking in the ground for, you know, a piece of dead skin and garbage and worms, and so he did the same thing, you know. But he kept growing, he kept getting bigger than everybody else, and his wings were getting bigger, and, you know. And sometimes when the eagles would fly in the sky above, he would look at them and move his wings, and he would think, something's not right here, like that, you know. So examples, same way, is that when we come in contact with the lives of different saints, you know, like that, or even just very high people, like heroism for my country, then they go out with spiritual activity, spiritual life, biographies of saints, and then incarnations of Krishna coming again and again. Then we think, wow, yes, you know. That's how I can also live that way. And it's also my potential. If you're just getting married, you're expecting to have children. But there's nothing that says you can't have God for your child. Right? That means you can't pray to God to be your child. Right? Or Jesus Christ. You know? Okay. But then, wow, that's unusual. You know, unusual personality. You know? And many devotees, they have very unusual children like that. It's a lot of fruit. Big responsibility. It's a big challenge. One little boy is Chakravarti's son. I don't know where he is now. But as soon as he heard what Maya was and everything else, he was on his parents' case right and left. They try to go to the movies. He would like start crying and say, "You're with Maya." So they had to hide what they were doing and stuff from him and find out, you know. Because right away he understood. He was a great soul. Great soul. You know. Yeah. So Bhagavad Gita is very nice, you know, basic instructions. 5,000 years ago, this is the whole Vedic culture, and 5,000 years ago was the end of the age of bronze. And things are just, you know, fall. There's still some leaves on the trees. There's still some things like that. Before it's silver, before it's gold. You know? So now we're coming into this age of iron. The dragons are going, you know, disappearing to the tops of the mountains or even the higher worlds. You know, they don't want to stay here during the wintertime when it's nasty. Dragons and the Nagas, or you understand. Different abodes, different realms of existence. And so then at that time, Krishna appeared. You know, he had some work, an incarnation of God and also God himself directly. And he did his job. And so then it was time to leave, right? You know, we've done our job in the prison. Things are organized again. They're straightened out. It's a progressive place. People can make progress if they want to. If they don't want to, okay, then they can stay here and, you know, forever. And we'll keep trying. We'll have different programs come through. For Johnny Cash will come to the prison, sing about, you know, something. You know, regular programs like that, you know. But if not, they keep them here and they won't cause problems in society. You know, mental hospital. So we'll be reading a chapter. What is it? Chapter 14 was Krishna retires, right? Chapter 15 is after hearing that Krishna has left, and his intimate associates, the emperor, Maharaj Yudhisthira, and his brothers and people, then they want to also leave. Text 1, Sutta Vivacha, Evam Krishna Saka Krishno Bhratra Rajna Vikalpitaha Nanasankarsh Padam Rupam Krishna Vishlesha Karshita. So Goma Swami said, Arjuna, The celebrated friend of Lord Krishna was grief-stricken because of his strong feelings of separation from Krishna, over and above all of Maharaj Yudhisthira's speculative inquiries. So he's asking him, why are you depressed, Arjuna? You've come back from Dwarka. Is it because you were defeated by somebody who wasn't as powerful as you? Have you failed to take care of old people? So many things could have happened. But he knows, but he's talking about all these things, and finally he says, or is it because, see this chapter, have you not taken care of old men and boys who deserve to dine with you? Have you left them and taken your meals alone? Have you committed some unpardonable mistake which is considered to be abominable? Or is it that you are feeling empty for all time because you might have lost your most intimate friend, Lord Krishna? Oh, my brother Arjuna, I can think of no other reason for you becoming so rejected. And then beyond Mala Maharaj's speculative inquiries, Arjuna, his own more intimate connection, starts to talk. Due to grief, Arjuna's mouth and lotus-like heart had dried up. Therefore, his body lost all luster. Now, remembering the Supreme Lord, he could hardly utter a word in reply. With great difficulty, he checked the tears of grief that smeared his eyes. He was very distressed because Lord Krishna was out of his sight, and he increasingly felt affection for him. Remembering Lord Krishna and his well wishes, benefactions, intimate familial relations, and his chariot driving, Arjuna, overwhelmed and breathing very heavily, began to speak. Arjuna Uvacha Vanchitoham Maharajan Harina Bandurupina Jena Pahritam Tejo Deva Vishma Panam Mahat. What is Vanchita? Vanchito, left by him. Arjuna said, O King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, who treated me exactly like an intimate friend, has left me alone. Thus my astonishing power, which astonished even the demigods, is no longer with me. I have just lost him, whose separation for a moment would render all the universes unfavorable and void, like bodies without life. Only by his merciful strength was I able to vanquish all the lusty princes assembled at the palace of King Drupada for the selection of the bridegroom. With my bows and arrows, I could pierce the fish target and thereby gain the hand of Draupadi. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Draupadi was the most beautiful daughter of King Drupada, and when she was a young girl, almost all the princes desired her hand. But Drupada Maharaj decided to hand her over to his daughter to Arjuna only, and therefore contrived a peculiar way. There was a fish hanging on the inner roof of the house under the protection of a wheel. It's like a chariot wheel, so it only is exposed like sometimes. The condition was that out of the princely order, one must be able to pierce the fish's eye, the wooden fish, through the wheel of protection. And no one would be able to allowed to look up at the target. On the ground there was a water pot in which the target and wheel were reflected, and one had to fix his aim towards the target by looking at the trembling water in the pot. So you got to look in the mirror and see this thing up here and shoot the arrow so it goes through the the rotating wheel at just the right time to hit the eye, and not that the water is also trembling. Maharaj Jupiter well knew that only Arjuna or alternately Karna could successfully carry out the plan. But still he wanted to hand his daughter to Arjuna. And in the assembly of the princely order, when Drishtadyumna, the brother of Draupadi, introduced all the princes to his grown-up sister, Karna was also present in the game. But Draupadi tactfully avoided Karna as the rival of Arjuna, and she expressed her desires through her brother Drishtadyumna that she was unable to accept anyone who was less than a Kshatriya. When Arjuna in the dress of a poor Brahmana, and Karna was less, by general knowledge, when Arjuna in the dress of a poor Brahmana pierced a difficult target, everyone was astonished, and all of them, especially Karna, offered a stiff fight to Arjuna. But as usual, by the grace of Lord Krishna, he was able to emerge very successfully in the princely fight, and thus gain the hand of Krishna, or Draupadi, die. Only by his merciful strength was I able to vanquish all the lusty princes assembled at the palace of King Draupadi for the selection of her bridegroom. With my bow and arrow, I could pierce the fish and thereby gain the hand of Draupadi.
Because he, Krishna, was near me, it was possible for me to conquer with great dexterity the powerful king of heaven, Indradev, along with the demigods assembled, along with his demigod associates, and thus enable the fire god to devastate the Kanava forest. And only by his grace was the demon named Maya saved from the blazing Kanava forest, and thus we could build our assembly house of wonderful architectural workmanship, where all the princes assembled during the performance of the Rajasuya Yagna and pay tributes to you, my brother, Yudhisthira. Your respectable younger brother, Bhima, who possesses the strength of 10,000 elephants, killed by his grace, Jarasandha, whose feet were worshipped by many kings. These kings have been brought for sacrifice in Jarasandha's Mahabhairav Yagna, but they were thus released, and later they paid tribute to your majesty, Maharaj Yudhisthira. It was he only who loosened the hair of all the wives of the miscreants who dared open the cluster of your queen's hair, which had been nicely dressed and sanctified for the great Rajasuya sacrificial ceremony. At that time, she fell down at the feet of Lord Krishna with tears in her eyes. So these are all described in great detail in the Mahabharata. I like the Peter Brooks version. There are many movies and stories about these translated ones. It's so intense, The British covered all this, But you start reading these classical stories from India, properly translated, you realize these are not savage people living in the jungle. The Mahabharata is full of ethical and moral considerations, so to speak, of beautiful poetry and things like that. Very, very subtle. Like that, And so, this is a summary. Lila Smarnam, it's very wonderful to remember these things. So Draupadi prayed to Lord Krishna, to please protect me. And then Krishna said, don't worry, in the end all of their wives will have their hair open like widows. During our exile, Durvasa, who eats with his 10,000 disciples, intrigued with our enemies to put us in a dangerous trouble. At that time, he, Lord Krishna, simply by accepting the remnants of food, saved us. Right? By his accepting food thus, the assembly of Munis, while bathing in the river, felt sumptuously fed, and all the three worlds were also satisfied. Because God is the root of everything. So if he's satisfied, everybody's satisfied. So his guys were coming to beg charity, and they couldn't supply it. So Krishna said, give me a little bit. So all was left. He ate that and was satisfied, and they were all satisfied. And he was embarrassed to go there because he thought, now we'll be able to eat, Wow, the purport's about three pages. It was by his influence only that in a fight I was able to astonish the personality of Godhead, Lord Shiva, and his wife, the daughter of Mount Himalaya. Thus, he, Lord Shiva, became pleased with me and awarded me his own weapon. Other demigods also delivered their respective weapons to me, and in addition, I was able to reach the heavenly planets in the present body and was allowed a half-elevated seat. When I stayed for some days as a guest in the heavenly planets, all the heavenly demigods, including Indradeva, took shelter of my arms, which were marked with a Gandiva bow to kill the demons named Nivata Kavacha. O Krishna, O King, descendant of Ajamita, at the present moment I am bereft of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by whose powerful influence I was so powerful. The military strength of the Kauravas was like an ocean in which there dwelled many invincible existences, and thus it was insurmountable. But because of his friendship, I, seated on the chariot, was able to cross over it, and only by his grace was I able to regain the cows, and also collect by force many helmets of the kings there, which were bedecked with jewels that were sources of all brilliance. So during this fight with their cousins, they were lost a gambling match, which they didn't want to participate in, and lost their kingdom. And then they were forced to stay in exile for 14 years in the forest. And the final year they had to stay incognito, hidden. And if their cousins found them, they had to go back to the forest for another 14 years. Very horrible. So they were hiding in the kingdom of Maharaj Virat. And Draupadi, the beautiful queen, was described as a maidservant helping the queen. Bhima, very powerful, he became a cook and taught the boys wrestling. Because he figured, if I'm a cook, I'll get enough to eat. Like that. And Arjuna, who was his greatest warrior on earth, had his curse he'd be a eunuch for 1 year, so he accepted that he became the dancing master for the ladies, the girls, like that. like that. You know, so nobody could find him. It was a perfect disguise. You know? And Yudhisthira was the emperor, then became the friend of the king, a counselor, was giving him so much good advice. The king was amazed, this man is the best of all advisors. So they were well hidden like that. You know? But then somebody began to figure out they're in this kingdom, we have to flush them out. Like that. So we'll do this, we'll do this. So the enemies came with all their giant, powerful soldiers, Bhima, Drona, Duryodhana, Karna, so many. And they then stole the cows of Maharaj Virat, wonderful herd of cows, his opulence. And then Arjuna, because everybody else had gone the other direction, the king, was left with nothing but the king's son, Uttara Kumar, who was young, and said, "Don't worry, I'll chase away these Kaurava princes like that. They shall see my prowess." You know? But I have no charioteer. And Draupadi said, "Well, actually, the dancing master, this eunuch, is one of the most famous charioteers in the world." And he was saying, "A eunuch for my charioteer?" He said, "Well, who else is going to do it?" You know? I said, "Well, okay." You know. So they went off there, and then as soon as Uttara Kumar saw these gigantic warriors like that, you know, he just got hot off a chariot and started running away. And Bhima and everybody else looking at him, what's going on there? It looks like maybe that's Arjuna, the chariot driver, but the warrior is running away and he's running after him. And what are they doing? You know. So then he told him who he was, I think, at that point. And their weapons were hidden near there, so he said, "Okay, now you've got to drive the chariot." "I can't even do that." "You've got to do it, don't worry. Just hang on, I'll tell you what to do," like that. So,
okay.
You know, "I'll try my best." You know. So they were driving, and Arjuna was so angry like that. And then he was attacking them. And then Duryodhana was thinking, "Oh, now we can defeat him. They've exposed themselves. Very good," you know, like that. You know, the cows are going away. And Bhishma said, "You can't possibly defeat him now. He's decorated with the most powerful weapon. And what is that? That's, you know, humiliation. Nobody fights, you know, like a person who's been humiliated and come back to regain his honor like that." She said, "He's decorated with this ornament of humiliation. You'll never be able to defeat him." So sure enough, he attacked them, and he was just annihilating everybody. And finally, he just went after Duryodhana. And Bhishma said, "God, protect him, get him out of here." So they were able to stop him long enough. And Duryodhana wasn't a coward. He came back and fought, and he was just annihilated. He ran away. So finally, then they used a sleeping weapon. They all went to sleep. And then Krishna told Uttara Kumar, "Collect their scarves, you know, their ornamental scarf, but don't touch Bhishma, grandfather, because I know he's just pretending." You know, Duryodhana doesn't know that, but he's pretending. You know? So he took back all these crowns and things and the cows, and then they were very pleased. But again, by Krishna's mercy, it was he only who withdrew the duration of life from everyone, and who on the battlefield withdrew the speculative power and strength of enthusiasm from the great military phalanxes made by the Kauravas, headed by Bhishma, Karna, Drona, Shalya, etc. Their arrangement was expert and more than adequate, but he, Lord Sri Krishna, while going forward, did all this. Great generals like Bhishma, Drona, Karna, Susharma, Salya, Jayadratha, Balika, all directed their invincible weapons against me. But his, Lord Krishna's grace, they could not even touch a hair on my head. Similarly, Prahlad Maharaj, the supreme devotee of Lord Nrisingadeva, was unaffected by the weapons the demons used against him. So after the whole battle was over, Arjuna was a little cocky, a little arrogant, a little proud that he killed Karna. And Krishna said, "Well, can you get off the chariot now? Get off the chariot." And he said, "What do you mean?" He got off. And Krishna stepped off, and Hanuman jumped off like that. And the whole thing just burst into flames, just burned to ashes. And Arjuna was looking at that because it was such a good vehicle, good war machine. That was like a Huey Cobra, like that. And amazing. And then Krishna said, you think, you know, that just because of your prowess, you were protecting the chariot, you think it could have withstood all these weapons and astras from all these great warriors that were directed against it, and finally from Karna, you know? No, it would have long ago been destroyed if my feet hadn't been touching it like that. So now Arjuna became a little humble, appreciating, you know, they were directing all these weapons against him, but finally Krishna was saving him. Like purports are just like nectar. Very long text too. I forgot what the meter is. Sautye vrita kumati nadmada ishvaro me. It's a beautiful poetry just to recite these things. If you know this, you know Sanskrit, it must be, you know, it's wonderful. This is, you're falling asleep, people are singing every night. It was by his mercy only that my enemies neglected to kill me when I descended from my chariot to get water for my thirsty horses. And it was due to my lack of esteem for my Lord that I dared engage him as my chariot driver, for he is worshipped and offered services by the best of men to attain salvation. O king, his joking and frank talks were pleasing and beautiful, decorated with smiles. His address is unto me as, O son of Pritha, O friend, O son of Kuru, and all such heartiness are now remembered by me, and thus I am overwhelmed. Generally, both of us used to live together and sleep and sit and loiter together, and at the time of advertising oneself for acts of chivalry, sometimes if there were irregularities, I used to reproach him by saying, my friend, you are very truthful. Even in those hours when his value was minimized, he, being the supreme soul, used to tolerate all those utterings of mine, excusing me exactly as a true friend excuses his true friend, or a father excuses his son. So hum. O Emperor, I am now separated from my friend and dearmost well-wisher, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore my heart appears to be void of everything. In his absence, I have been defeated by a number of infidel cowherd men while I was guarding the bodies of all of his wives. I have the same Gandiva bow, the same arrows, the same chariot drawn by the same horses, and I use them as the same Arjuna to whom the kings offer their due respects. But in the absence of Lord Krishna, all of them at a moment's notice have become null and void, exactly like offering clarified butter on ashes, accumulating money with a magic wand, or sowing seeds in barren land. O king, since you have asked me about our friends and relatives in the city of Dwarka, I will inform you they all, and all of them, were cursed by the Brahmanas, and as a result they became intoxicated with wine made of putrefied rice, and fought amongst themselves with sticks, not even recognizing one another. Now all but four or five of them are dead and gone. Factually, this is all due to the supreme will of the Lord, the personality of Godhead. Sometimes people kill one another, and other times they protect one another. O king, as in the ocean, the bigger and stronger aquatics swallow up the smaller and weaker ones, so also the supreme personality of Godhead, to lighten the burden of the earth, has engaged the stronger yadus to kill the weaker, and the bigger yadus to kill the smaller. Now I am attracted to those instructions imparted to me by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, because they are impregnated with instructions for relieving the burning heart in all circumstances of time and space. So if you just read this chapter in the Padapadma program, and just read this one purport, it's nice. Purport. Herein Arjuna refers to the instructions of Bhagavad Gita. How many verses?
700.
Yeah, so without the purports, how big is it? A little like that, a little book. It's actually this big, but small. Yeah. Here Arjuna refers to the instructions of Bhagavad Gita, which was imparted to him by the Lord on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. The Lord left behind him the instructions of Bhagavad Gita, not for the benefit of Arjuna alone, but also for all time and in all lands. So before Gita Jayanti, you could actually read this or publish this or have a preliminary, you know, program the day before. Yeah. The Bhagavad Gita in all times and in all lands. The Bhagavad Gita being spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the essence of all Vedic wisdom. It is nicely presented by the Lord Himself for all who have very little time to go through the vast Vedic literatures like the Upanishads, Puranas, and Vedanta Sutras. It is put within the study of the great historical epic, Mahabharata, which was especially prepared for the less intelligent class, women, laborers, and those who are worthless descendants of the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and higher sections of the Vaishyas. The problem which arose in the heart of Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra was solved by the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna, again, after the departure of Lord from the vision of earthly people, when Arjuna was face to face with being vanquished in his acquired power and prominence, he wanted to again remember the teachings of the great Bhagavad Gita, just to teach all concerned that Bhagavad Gita can be consulted in all critical times, not only for solace from all kinds of mental agonies, but also for a way out of great entanglements which may embarrass one in such a critical hour. The merciful Lord left behind him great teachings of Bhagavad Gita so that one can take the instructions of the Lord even when he is not visible to material sight. Material senses cannot have any estimation of the Supreme Lord, but by his inconceivable power, the Lord can incarnate himself to the sense perception of the conditioned souls in a suitable manner through the agency of matter, which is also another form of the Lord's manifested energy. Thus the Bhagavad Gita or any authentic scriptural sound representation of the Lord is also the incarnation of the Lord. There is no difference between the sound representation of the Lord and the Lord himself. One can derive the same benefit from the Bhagavad Gita as Arjuna did in the personal presence of the Lord. And then there's like about two paragraphs where Prabhupada gives like a nice summary of Bhagavad Gita. It's very nice for Bhagavad Gita class. If you give me a seminar, read this, get that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, our guru's 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 guru. Our line goes all the way back to Krishna, 5,000 years ago. And before that goes to Brahma. He wrote a whole story, you know, Jivadharma. It's a novel like that, describing his philosophy, different dialogues, examples. So one time there was one great, sitting in Babaji's and Sadhu, he was sitting worshiping his deity, chanting, praying every day, very purified person, preaching, giving advice to people. And then some Muslims came on their horses, some mullahs, some Muslim philosophers, priests. And he said, oh my God, yeah, I had an argument with him then. They say, Allah is not pleased when you make a form and worship it. He's insulted like that, make a form like that. So he gave a very nice argument, which I've used several times. And he said, well, for example, like you take the word Allah, it's a very special word. And he said, yes, Allah, may his name be praised, like that. Now, if I say the word Lala, or something like that, then that's not a sacred word, is it? And he said, well, no, like that. He said, well, so the word Allah is simply a form made of sound, right? Allah, Allah, Mala, Kala, Pula, Tila, Mimi, Fupu, Wawa. They're all just forms made of sound, right? Talk. This is a form as opposed to tick, right? And so, but that particular form and making that particular is it God? Is God Himself, or is it a symbol of God? Should we respect it just because it's a symbol, or actually is it Allah Himself? And they're beginning to. Well, amongst ourselves, we also have discussions about this, but yes, it's definitely, if anybody said something bad about that name, yes, it would be war, it would be fight. You know, anybody appreciates that, you know. And some, yes, he's there. He can be there. A great saint can appreciate his presence through his name, like that. So what's the difference in making a form out of wood? If it's authorized, if God agrees to be present in this form, like that, and so on. Right? You know? Form and sound, form and wood, what's the difference? So the mullahs got on their horses and went away and decided to come back tomorrow and think about this. You know? So it's a very good argument. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has different arguments. But this is the point Prabhupada's making. There's no difference. You know, the sound is a sound incarnation. This is a logical, this is an incarnation of God in logic. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the end, Krishna says, one who worships his Bhagavad Gita worships me with his
intelligence.
Yeah. Somebody else worships by making a nice altar, putting beautiful dresses on the deity, like that, or carving them very beautifully. Or architect worships by making a temple. Somebody else worships by arranging good administration, so you know God can be properly respected and people can get benefit from him, so he can protect them the way he wants to. Okay? And somebody else worships him by understanding him. Yeah. Ultimately, we all have intelligence. Everybody has different intelligence. But as a human being, we have sufficient intelligence to understand God, to appreciate Him through logic, right? And through logic, like that. So that's what Krishna is explaining. This is jnana. In logic, you can appreciate Him. You know? You can orient yourself properly, you know? And then you can listen. You can do austerities to purify your senses. And you can do austerities to purify your intelligence. And then you can actually hear the name of God from saintly people. You can actually hear his pastimes like we're doing now, right? And as you become purified, there's different reactions. You know, Shrindatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtanana Hridyanta Stohiya Bhagarani Vidunoti Suhitsatam. This is hearing and chanting is in itself pious activity. You know, you don't have to do anything else. Yeah? I saw the story many times. One devotee named Bill W., a devotee I knew, he was an alcoholic. He was living in Dallas and a long time ago, and he would go every Sunday feast and eat like four or five plates of prasadam. Right? And the rest of the time he was living in a bar. And in bars they give you little sandwiches, potato chips. So somehow or other he was like surviving a little money here and there during the week and drinking beer all week and playing darts and whatever, So but on Sunday you go to the Hare Krishna temple, he's a young guy and trying to figure out what to do. And but he had Agyata Sukriti, different levels. He had somehow or other he had a little pious credit. So he felt guilty about going just to eat. I said, okay, I should just go and time for their hymn singing and their sermon, and then after that, okay, So it was kirtan, and it was class, and prasadam. So he was going every Sunday for 1 year, 52 times. He sat through the kirtan, he sat through the lecture, and finally, the next stage is called shravana dasha. It's like pouring water on a dry sponge. You take a dry sponge and you put it in the water, what happens? It's still dry when it comes out, like that, So you hold it under there, and you can watch it. At some point, some little corner or something starts to get wet, then it starts to expand. So that was his level. He'd been hearing this. Shunvatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana. He was drinking and everything else because he was sinful. He'd done something sinful. So that was his way of dealing with reality then, was to take alcohol, to kill himself, to burden his stuff, to face his reality, to face things that were happening to him. That was being burned up because he was honest enough to sit there. God's appreciating this guy, And so after 1 year, his mind said to him,
Bill.
What is it? What do you want?
What are they talking about, Bill?
I don't know. So for the first time after 1 year, 52 lectures, he actually was able to try and focus on the lecture. He said the first thing he realized it was the Hare Krishnas were vegetarian. It was like that. That's right. There's been no meat in the food for 52 weeks. These guys are weird. Vegetarian. So the next thing he realized was the Hare Krishnas believed in reincarnation. 52 lectures. Wow, these guys are really strange. I'm not going to come back here anymore. But the food's really good. Maybe there is reincarnation. Maybe I'll come back in the bar as a cockroach. And I won't have to pay for beer anymore. Let me think about these things. Okay, so this is the first stage. It's called penetration. The next stage is acceptance. We actually begin to think about these things. Yeah, it sounds reasonable. Yeah, this religious ideas are right. There has to be a controller behind things. Everybody's making something, so it has to be somebody making the sun, the moon, the stars. And then after some point, you go on hearing, chanting, repeating and talking about it. It penetrates. This is the best religion. It's a universal process of yoga. Everybody preaches this. Muhammad, Jesus Christ, Socrates, do this. Best way. Listen, and then try to explain it to somebody else, and you understand it. The next stage is it actually starts to become ecstatic. I remember as a child when I was in the Christian church that he was starting reciting these things, and the priest was doing it as a formality, but because of previous situation like that, I was actually understanding and actually just in ecstasy. I wanted to hear these things. I didn't know the science, but I wanted to hear these things again, those days and things like that. Wow, I'm pretty much the only person in my family like that. But that was my development. I could appreciate that. So after that, you're appreciating some ecstasy, but it's intermittent. Something interferes with it. Some you go back to work, you forget about everything. Oh my God! Come home in the evening. So finally, you come to the point where you're serious. What's it called? Bhajana Kriya. Want to take initiation? Want to have an acharya? Want to have a teacher? Want to learn this systematically? So you take diksha, initiation. You become a formal student, have a teacher to learn the spiritual science. Get up in the morning, full morning program, full evening program, chant your rounds. Then you start becoming, so you can keep this consciousness, you can stay ecstatic, you can stay liberated from anxiety, you can understand what's going on, you can never be, go ahead in life, facing these problems that face everybody, men, women, children, right? And at some point it becomes uninterrupted. You're always happy. Your mind starts to become disturbed or something, your intelligence just picks it up. So, no, don't think like that. Remember Bhagavad Gita. Remember this. Remember that. Right? See, you know, you've been studying so much, reading, it starts to sink in, it starts to fill your intelligence. This is how you should do that situation. That's how you should think about that. To hell with them. Let the devil take care of them. He's a better preacher than I am. You know? Or no, I have to go ahead now and be sacrificed and take care of these people. Yeah? Be merciful. Yeah? And so, you know, it's constant. Uninterrupted Krishna consciousness. Is that the conclusion? This is all nectar instruction. No, well, favorable, yeah, positive, uninterrupted Krishna consciousness. No, this is anushmarnam, and it describes different levels of smarnam, yeah, shravanam, kirtanam, smarnam. Next is smarnam, which is uninterrupted, before it's interrupted time to time. You learn the technique of sadhana bhakti, it's uninterrupted. Now it has to become more intense. Right, like sugar candy, you know, the juice of the sugar candy, you cook it, it becomes like molasses, like that. Cook it more, it starts to become thicker, like that, right? First off, it's like gore, like solid, but it's like soft. Cook it more, you find you get crystals. So now it has to become more intense. You have to wake up, really see what's going on, really become more stimulated. This is bhava. In bhava, Krishna's my little baby. I have to protect him. We've got Krishna here, you know. I have to take care of him. Got to take him with us on a vacation like that. You can't stay here with no food for 2 weeks. Okay, so you build a box, you know, God in the box, Baba says. Many people have God in the box. Yeah. So it's a feeling of maternal love for Krishna, for God, all over the world. You know? But it's not intense, so Krishna can't really reciprocate with it like that. This is bhava. Stai bhava. So you go on following the process, it becomes more intense until finally uninterrupted, intense smarnam. Then it has to become more broad until it includes everything. Within my area, I'm intensely Krishna conscious. We've got to build this temple, Prabhu. We have to get these books out, you know. No, you can't cook like that for Krishna. What are you talking about? What are you thinking about? Look, read the label. Most pure ingredients. Who grew these grains? You know, we only want grains cooked by grown by devotees. You know, yeah. So this is intense Krishna consciousness in your area, but then it starts to expand till it includes everything in the universe. Hari's story is that one time they were on the balcony in Mayapur. He said, Prabhupada turned to him and said, I want to make the entire world Krishna conscious now. He said it was so intense, he just felt it was like jumping off the balcony. It was just like, you know. But he didn't have the training to know to be able to expand it like that. But yes, that's Prabhupada was suppressing that. Prabhupada was covering that because people weren't on that level. To have that kind of vibhava, that kind of stimulation, it just wasn't ready for it. So by intense, uninterrupted, broad, unceasing Krishna consciousness, you finally remember who you are. Like that. I am a cow. My name is Clarabelle. I'm supposed to give this kind of milk. I haven't been out in the pasture. I'm not chewing my grass. You know? For one moment, I became absorbed in this egoistic world. Right? One moment, absorbed in the material world. Christians give the examples like a bird flies into a room and he flies out again. That one moment when he's in that room is our material life. You know? So right now we're absorbed in so many, we're watching this television marathon with all these programs going by on the Me channel. It's the You channel, the Hear It All channel, like that. Wow, it's all about me, look. You know, this and that. It's a comedy, it's a tragedy, it's, you know, on and on. It's a game show, one after another. You know. It's the whole thing. Krishna's trying to come on to the TV show and playing different parts, like, you know, to get us to understand our real position. Every experience we have in the material world is educational. The material world only exists for our spiritual edification. And Krishna never leaves it. He's always here with us. He's never separated. He's Advaita. He's not different to this world. You know? But finally comes the point where we can take our lessons, you know, directly, you know, like that. You know? We're willing to submit, to listen, be tolerant. Okay. So then we're hearing. And then we start chanting. And that's the process, the best yoga. And Bhagavad Gita, you know, is excellent. It's presenting basically karma yoga. And after that, your life is Krishna conscious. And after that, there's different intensities. I'm working for Krishna, but now I have to work for Krishna with love. You know, not just enough sacrificing results to him, but I have to bring them with the real feeling. Hey, here's your lunch. Come back in half an hour. I'll see you later. And your wife comes in. Hey, here's your lunch. I'll see you in half an hour. It was And then you look at it. You say, oh, I cooked. You like that subject that Mataji cooked at her house? I asked her for the recipe and I cooked it like that. You know, I don't know if I was able to do it like she would. You try to tell me. Well, this is a big different experience now eating like that. You know, it's like, and even if it's half as bad, you say, oh, it's better. It's very, very cool. Yeah. You cooked it much better than she did. Oh, really? Yeah. So eating becomes a different experience, right? Eating for your soul, you know, like that. Not for your eat for your heart, eat for your soul. What about eating does your stomach know? No. Yeah. So eating for this spiritual reality is a much finer thing. But we have to give up, you know, the gross levels, you know, our tongue, belly, genitals, and give them up and go to this higher enjoyment. And you discover it's much more, in the beginning it's impersonal. But later on we discover this is the origin of all the rasa in my tasting, all the rasa in my stomach, you know. Yeah? All the rasa in my mental satisfaction. Like, oh, wow. Yeah? Yeah? It's finally in this rasa with Krishna. Hearing and chanting, honoring prasad. Like that. It's a hint there. Honoring prasad. So, any kind of questions? It's Lila Smarnam. Arjuna's remembering these things. Smarnam. Like that. Understand the pastime, understand the philosophy then, especially remembering Krishna's pastimes, next level. Just read the Krishna book. If you can read the Krishna book 24 hours a day, then don't read Bhagavad Gita. You don't need to. But it's also the Smarna. Yeah. Even the gopis want to hear what Krishna is saying in Kurukshetra. What did Krishna tell Arjuna then? What did he do then? How did he? Oh, he's so kind. He left us to go help him. Yeah. Yeah. There's a different reading of Bhagavad Gita. Yeah. Giving a Bhagavad Gita class to the gopis. Yeah. We're listening. I'll read the purport. So any questions or comments? Any questions now? You have any questions? You there. Are you understood what I'm saying? Come on. You must have a question. Yes, sir. Okay.
Yeah. Pride has a fall. Pride goes before a fall.
Yeah.
And Maharaj, you said that even Arjuna, to that stage, he had pride.
I didn't say it. Bhagavan said it. With Karna. Yeah.
So advanced, so devotee like Arjuna.
Yeah.
So what is the situation of we human beings? When can we realize to that extent?
No, again, you know, I don't know the internal thing, but Arjuna is Nara, you know, and Krishna is Narayana. He's eternal associate, you know. And so probably most likely all these instructions are just little stories for us to appreciate. You know, Arjuna is taking the part of a student. Right? Like, I know you know all the answers to all these things, but you're just asking the questions so I have a chance to explain them for the benefit of others. Yeah. But that's why I think that Arjuna is showing us, you know, Krishna is having Arjuna putting this consciousness to show, you know, how subtle that even if somebody's, like, Karna was your enemy in many ways, Arjuna was feeling competition with him. He had his shortcomings in certain ways, like that, you know? But Arjuna shouldn't have neglected his many good qualities and appreciated those, right? So that's the lesson too, is that even you're such an enemy like Karna, still, you know, you should, you know, appreciate, you know, his qualities like that, and not become overly proud about how God is helping you, right? Yeah, many subtle things, like subtle contaminations, we have to get rid of. Yeah.
But as in Srimad Bhagavatam and all, there are so many incarnations like Vyasadeva and so many incarnations. So how to understand like so many incarnations with Lord?
No, we don't. We understand a little bit about everything. Sorry, a little bit about everything, a lot about one thing. You know, so we hear a little bit, we see on different things, and then as we become purified, you know, if we have our swarup, and Prabhupada's saying, just because I'm teaching you about Radha Krishna doesn't mean you all have to go to Goloka. You come out of this world and you realize, well, actually, I'm a Yayojavasi. You know, I'm in different positions. Yeah, yeah. And so then, you know, different people are in some ways have become more attracted to different incarnations. You know, because of psychological reasons, and finally because of the nature of their soul. You know, for example, Murari Gupta was a physician in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, and people were criticizing him because he wouldn't, you know, wouldn't worship Radha and Krishna, worshiping Ram. So finally, Nimai said, you know, Krishna lives at the height of artistic craftsmanship. His qualities and characteristics are insuperable by any other personality, even your Lord Ramachandra. You should take up the worship of Radha and Krishna. So Murari Gupta came back the next morning and he said, please kill me. And Nimai said, what do you mean? He says, I know who you are. You're the same Supreme Lord that I worship, incarnate. I went up all night and I realized this. And I've been thinking about this so deeply, and I realize that that's who you are. And I can't disobey your orders, because you're that Supreme Lord, like that, incarnate as a Brahmin boy. But at the same time, I just cannot give up the worship of Lord Ramachandra. I tried all night long to do it. I just can't do it. So what can I do? I can't disobey your orders, and I can't give up, and I can't obey them. So please just kill me, you know? And Lord Chaitanya starts laughing hysterically and embraces him and says, of course you can't give him up. You're an incarnation of Hanuman. And so it's impossible for you ever to give up the worship of Lord Ramachandra, like that. And he says, blessed is the servant who, even upon being rejected by the master, never rejects his master. And blessed is the master who is his servant. When his servant goes away, he grabs him by the hair and drags him back, like that. Yeah. So different people have their swarup.
But yeah. Like Vyasadeva, he is also incarnation of...
He's an incarnation, yeah. Is he Shakti Vesh?
Literally
incarnation. Huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's a Shakti Vesh avatar. So there are different kinds of incarnations, and we have different relationship with them. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, among men I am the fish, I am the shark. So that's an incarnation of God. Doesn't mean we'll go offering puja and, you know, that kind of stuff. No, we have a certain relationship. We appreciate this as a manifestation of Krishna's ghastliness, of his ruthlessness. And so I should appreciate this is here. You know, I shouldn't be sinful. I should remind us to control my mind about doing bad things. Yeah? Yeah? But not in terms of like trying to worship him like I would like, you know, appreciate some other incarnation, some vibhuti-mat-sattva. And beyond that, specific energetic incarnations. And there's Abhesha avatars. And then they have some potency, some shakti to accomplish something. So we appreciate that Krishna is, this is not an ordinary person like me, but he's empowered. Right? And so then I see God in that form. So right now, like Arjuna was Shakti Vesha avatar for some time. He had specifically empowered by Krishna. But then it's finished. So now we relate to him like an ordinary human being again. See? That's our relationship now. Yeah? And Lila avatars, we relate to them in a certain way, you know. But with Lila avatars, you have to be always some respect. Right? Always some Aishwarya, you know, some respect like that. But only with Krishna can we reciprocate these spontaneous feelings, which may or may not be manifest in our heart. Yeah? So that way, with different incarnations are to stimulate us to understand, like, you know, the gopis, when Krishna was trying to hide from the gopis. So he took the form of Narayan. So the gopis came along and they said, oh, it's Narayan. You know, they paid obeisance. They said, have you seen Krishna, sir? And he pointed four arms that way. You know, I said, thank you. You know, so we're after Krishna. And Radharani came along and her bhakti was so intense that Krishna kept like losing two of his arms, like that, four of his arms, two of his four arms. And Radharani's looking at him and he's that way. And so he ran off and Krishna ran the other way, you know, like that. You know? So Krishna incarnates, and different people have different responses. The gopis say they're just respectful to Narayan, but I wasn't there. It's the devata. Yeah? Yeah? So many incarnations are innumerable, and we'll probably never come in contact with all of them. Yeah? But some are mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam for certain reasons, and, you know, the attraction, yeah, like that. Yeah? So developing a relationship with Krishna's incarnations and follows naturally develop a relationship with Krishna later on. Okay? Yeah, and especially, who's the most prominent incarnation at this time?
Sukadeva.
Chaitanya.
Yeah, so then we should follow his process. Narayana was teaching severe austerities. Ram was teaching ideal family life. Lord Chaitanya is teaching Sankirtan Yagna. So we should do that and worship that incarnation, because that's the current incarnation, so it's our duty, whether we understand him or not. Yeah. One Ramanuja professor, he was head of our school of Kula in Maya in Vrindavan a long time ago. And somebody said, you know, I said, yes, but the Lord Chaitanya is God. He said, yes, yes, I'm Ramanuja. He accepted that Lord Chaitanya was the incarnation of God, and we should follow his example. But he couldn't see him much beyond Yuga Avatar. He just saw Lord Chaitanya as a Yuga Avatar, preaching the glories of the Holy Name with that. Maybe Shakti of Aish.
There's a question to a discussion we had yesterday about the regulation of senses. We told that that the more we indulge in senses, our mind gets absorbed to the senses. So that is the pleasure aspect of the senses, where we can control, regulate our senses, which seeks pleasure.
Or even pain is the same
pain
too.
Pain also.
Yeah.
But in pain, it's much difficult than. I can easily go and say, okay, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to eat certain foodstuff.
No. Control. After some time, you want to torture yourself. You know, after eating enough sweets, bitter tastes good. So you know, after you've done something bad, then you chastise yourself. You've been enjoying, like, lording over your children, yelling at them, screaming at them, and I'm the god of this house. You must do what I say. Then you feel bad, so then you, like, you know, humiliate yourself in front of them, and you know, hurt yourself in front of them. You know, there's nothing here, so it's all duality. Living in there, you're looking for both happiness and distress. He wants distress as well as, you know, you see that. I mean, how many movies are there? And one thing about Indian movies are coming. Almost all Indian movies have women crying in them. So it's like, oh, you're a beautiful thing. Let's just see women crying. Women love to cry. And, it's great gratification. You know, to lament and cry. And, you know.
But when a devotee falls with the body deterioration, when the body has gross body has some severe disease, illness.
Yeah.
But then, isn't that an impediment to the? Because it's so painful. Sometimes these are so painful.
The happiness, the actions and reactions are created by material nature. The happiness and distress are created by the living entity. So in a poor country in Korea, in the mountains, some guy's son found a horse, bridle, everything. And the law was that if nobody claimed it in 3 days, it was theirs. So nobody claimed it. Everybody said, "Wow!" And there's no horse in the village. It's a very poor place. You're so fortunate. And he said, maybe, you know. So then a few days later, the boy's a little arrogant. He's riding the horse around and throws him off. He breaks his leg. There's no doctor for days walking. They did the best they could. They knew this boy was going to be a crippled boy his whole life, you know. And so everybody said, oh, you're so unfortunate, to the father. And he said, maybe. So about 3 days later, the emperor's captains came through and captured all the young men and put them in chains to take them off to serve in a foreign war. And everybody knew that all they would never see their sons ever again. But one boy couldn't go because he had a broken leg. So the only man in the entire village who had a son was this guy. And everybody said, you're so fortunate. And he said,
maybe.
Yeah. So I mean, that's where the story stops, but I can go on imagining forever. You know? So what is happiness and what is distress? If that Maharaj, Parikshit took this curse of a snake bird coming, you know, if I tell you, oh, I see in the future, you're going to be stabbed to death by some man with a knife. He's going to stab you again and again and again until you're dead within the next week. And your whole life, you're like, you know, watching everybody, you know, like that, you know. But Socrates, his specific reaction was that. He was, oh, at last, yeah, I can kill myself. And he said, well, you know, the philosopher's always waiting for the chance to leave this gross body, you know. But there's an injunction against suicide. Otherwise, you know, long ago, right? Why keep this nasty thing, nasty body? So it depends on your particular attitude, you know, towards the disease and this and that. And of course, the distress, then is not material. Yes, I can't do my service. It's the service Krishna has given me. I can't do it, you know. So then Arjuna is saying that, let me give up this body. We can't serve Krishna anymore. What's the use of staying in this world? And he's allowing us to go. Uddhava had to stay. Yeah?
Okay.
Yeah. Now many devotees would make great advancement because of diseases. Mm. Yeah?
Yeah, great opportunity. Yeah.
One devotee, one lady also, lady doctor in Peru. There was a devotee named Vasudev Das, and he had, hepatitis. You know, terminal hepatitis was getting worse and worse. And it's in the community, so she came one night because her wife's calling, and she came in, and she was like, you know, was losing it in terms of like dealing with him and stuff like that. So he's had to start preaching to her about how we're not this body and everything else, and Krishna's controlling everything. And so she finally got her intelligence because she was this, you know, personal friend and everything else. It was just too much. And his children, young children, who actually have suffered a lot after that because he left, you know. Yeah. So, but yeah, he was really, really helped him, forced him to examine the philosophy, consider everything. Yeah. Yeah. And he really, you know, really was, it was very purified. He left very good in consciousness. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So another question. Comments. Somewhere in the distance, a dog howled. This is Gary Larson. This cartoon. Gary Larson, yes. The animal cartoons. The farmer turns the corner and there's the cow with a picture of a human being with all these things marked off for like cutting and cooking. And the cows turn and they look. This farmer comes and sees them like this. And the caption says, somewhere in the distance, a dog howled. Gonna eat the farmer. Yeah. So very nice. And every day, you know, it was... Prabhupada says 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour in the evening, just read my books and discuss them until they're threadbare, like that. And maybe you can organize better and better programs. You know, if everybody reads before, and then you get ideas, you know, like that. So more systematic programs, studying. And as you develop a little taste. And, you know, Chandrakapani says that one's good for inspiration, you know, and insight. Two's good for study. So I've been several times with another devotee there for over a year on one project like that. And, oh, it's so nice, you know, just to study together and go through things like that. Just, build a very, very nice, strong consciousness. And the intelligence becomes changed. As what Freud would call and Jung would call the subconscious. Most of our buddhi is we're not conscious of it. It's doing all these things, but it's changing by hearing. Your senses and mind may not change so much, but your intelligence is changing. And deep down, you're changing. And when the time of death, when your mind and intelligence and senses go, they'll have nothing to hang on to. Like a tree without roots, you know, evil thing that has to be washed away. And all the work we've done, the time of death will really amaze you. Right? You know, amaze you. Wow, I never knew I was becoming so Krishna conscious. Yeah. And so these things, like almost dying or diseases in our, wow, Krishna's giving me a chance to see. For example, about, I don't know, kind of 7 years ago, I had a really bad fever, could barely walk, and my mind was thinking about this and that. So I just had lied in there for hours, and this and that, and this and that, and fighting. And about 3 years later, it happened again, and now my mind was in the mode of goodness. And with some effort, I could just make it Krishna conscious. You know? And about a year ago or something, a year and a half ago, same thing happened. Maybe 3 years. And then I could see my mind was actually just spontaneously beginning to be Krishna conscious. I was just lying in dreams about things, festivals, arguments with devotees, whatever, you know, pastimes, songs. So make Krishna's mercy, I could see. Because the time of death, all you have is your mind, right? The body's finished. And we're leaving it. You know? Yeah. So, okay, the last question. In Spanish, you say the ultimate question.
I was discussing with one of my friends, and he didn't like my answer. I want to hear your comment.
Okay.
He was asking, you are building a new temple.
Yeah.
So it's going to be ready in maybe next year or so. And I said, yeah. So you're going to get a new deity. But yeah. No. We don't worship statues in the temple. This is a deity. It's installed deity.
Yeah.
We did a pran pradishta.
Yeah.
And when we buy a new house, we don't get a new parents or new children. So, this is Krishna's temple and he's moving in the new house.
Yeah, but a new house.
But he didn't like the answer. So I don't know what should we say.
No, Abraham Lincoln said, if you're Abraham Lincoln of Bhatia, you can please all the people some of the time. You can please some of the people all the time, but But you can't please all the people all the time. So some people are just, you can't please them. It's Maya's trick, you know. So in the end, you realize, well, I can't get the message across to him. But I don't know why. I mean, sometimes people. One time, an old guy in India was preaching Mayavad philosophy, and all the Brahmacharis were so infuriated with him and angry at him. But I was listening to his heart, and it seemed he didn't really believe that. Actually, what it was happening was he was very attracted to the devotees. He was intentionally creating this like argument so that he wouldn't be involved. You know, so they all left. I was sitting there, and I started making him speak, just talking with him, friendly, taking the prasadam. And then, he started calming down, and then he was sort of asking questions about, well, do you have to shave your head, and that kind of questions. He was Indian, he knew that. But that was the real thing, do I have to really commit myself like this and that? You know, it was more like unconscious questions coming out. And I was explaining to him, and finally he was just peaceful and started to develop his relationship with the devotees and get involved. So sometimes it's because of too much attraction, right, that people manifest repulsion. Yeah, you understand that. It's just, oh, it's okay. You don't have to get involved so much. Just come on out again. Just come to the big festivals like that, visit like that. It's okay. Yeah. But you know, this person is really good, advanced devotee, but it's just entangled right now. Yeah. So like the different people, different ways like that. Yeah. But if you explain it the way you explain it now, it's just very rational. Yeah.
But the person knows. I mean, Krishna. I mean, he keep coming for a long time.
Yeah.
I don't know why people.
I don't know. In a lot of San.
But they just come and go. They don't do any more service. So I don't know why they don't.
In Santa Cruz, San Jose, California, we had Rohini Kumar established Radha Nataji. You know, Nataji with Radharani, which is some. It's an esoteric relationship. Under Govardhan Hill, Radharani is there with Nataji. There's a whole story like that. But it's a very esoteric type thing. And again and again and again and again, people were confused. And finally, everybody decided, that Nataji should go a certain place and be worshipped properly. And then we should get Krishna should be in a form like ISKCON temple. For his ashram, okay. I even told him this, you know. But if you want to have an ISKCON temple, then it's got to be kind of this standard kind of public thing, you know. So finally, we were discussing this for a long time, and finally we said, okay, we're going to do it. And then finally we said, okay, Didi's been ordered, it'll come in 3 months. And then we installed him on Gaur Purnima, and 3 months after that, one man who used to come almost every Sunday, he lived in Sacramento, he'd come a little bit later, he was giving nice donation, about $100 a month. He'd always come in time, you know, to take prasadam and stuff like that. He used the kirtan, a little bit of lecture, kirtan prasadam, you know. Then finally, 3 months after Gaur Purnima, after all these announcements and everything else, he said, oh, you've changed the statue. He was there in the temple, on and on. So that's, he was a very nice person, but he couldn't appreciate that it was more than a statue. Yeah. So different people, I don't know, different people have different reasons why they feel different things, you know. I don't know what it is, you know. Yeah. I personally wouldn't think about it, but Nilamata was, Nilamata wasn't going to be the new temple. Why build a new temple? Yeah, I mean, he's the whole reason. Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay, the Pratons. Chant a little more here. Chant a little more, and then take this honor for song.
Hariharaye nama Krishna Yadavaya namaha.
Hariharaye nama Krishna Yadavaya namaha.
Yadavaya madhavaya Keshavaya namaha.
Yadavaya madhavaya Keshavaya namaha.
Hariharaye nama Krishna Yadavaya namaha.
Yadavaya, Madhavaya, Keshavaya.
When he walks, everyone says, oh, it's so graceful. Very nice to meet with the professor, Dean John Atlin. He came to temple. He was there.
He was there. Center for Hindu Studies.